And welcome back to Speak Up Las Cruces with Peter Goodman and Daisy Maldonado. And for the next half hour, Frank Zamora. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning. Good to be here.
So you've been a pastor. You teach psychology at Doñana Community College. I know you've been doing some sort of focus groups of late, talking to people. And you also run, what's it called? The Institute for Personal and Professional Growth?
The School for Personal and Professional Growth. That's correct. But let me make a correction. I didn't teach psychology. Philosophy.
No
problem.
My senior moment, though, actually, if we get to talk about that, one of the things I was going to ask you is how so much that used to be philosophy, when it was a big deal in colleges, is gone elsewhere, like psychology. I mean, what we call psychology would have been philosophy in the old days. So tell me about what you're doing currently, and I know you want a discussion of love as a way to heal in our, somewhat unhappy society.
Let me start by simply addressing to the audience, where I'm coming from and how I've arrived at this particular juncture. As you mentioned, I was a pastor for the first 30 years of my professional life. I resigned as senior pastor of First Baptist Church Las Cruces in February of 2004. And since then, kind of a dual track, actually, teaching, as I said, philosophy at Doñana Community College, but also doing work with Mesilla Valley Hospice for the last 20-plus years. And so if you stop to think about it, the world of theology, those first 30 years, sort of the world of answers. Every religion on the planet suggests we have the answers. And so that was my life, that was my world, as it were. And then for the last 20 years, the world of philosophy, by contrast, the world, if you will, or the universe of questions. Question, 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 question. Mm-hmm. And so I have for the last 20 years, I think, I can say this honestly, personally been pretty focused on trying to find some answers. And so a colleague of mine who is now finishing his PhD in psychology, Ivan Corral, took my course about 10 years ago and at Doñana Community College. And he and I about 6 years ago decided, what can we do to enhance Las Cruces? What can we do to actually try to help people? And so we founded the School for Personal and Professional Growth. And we're obsessed with the idea of first principles, if you will. We believe or contend that life is basically relational.
Mm-hmm.
Relationships. A relationship simply defined would be just the interaction between people. So what is the best way for us to relate to each other? We've boiled it down to one word, love. But the minute you say that, someone objects and says, my goodness, there are so many different varieties and versions and aspects of love. How could that possibly be the case?
Well, some have said we ought to have 24 or 36 words for love, the way the Eskimos do for snow, or the Inuit, because of those varieties. So how, I know you're working on defining it.
Well,
do you have a definition?
I think we have a definition, actually, and I'll challenge your audience today. I've been challenging people for 6 years now. As I said, we've been pretty focused on it, to see if someone can come up with a more expansive and more exact definition of love than what you find in 1 Corinthians 13. And specifically verses 3 through about 11. And let me repeat that for the audience. They've heard it. You've heard it. Most people who've ever been to a wedding has heard the passage. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not arrogant. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-serving. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always endures. Love never ends.
I guess I would, if I were trying, I'd say love wants the best for the loved, even in preference to the selves, and does not fear the loved, except terribly fears the loss of the loved.
I don't disagree, and I think if you'll take that, and that's not the entire passage, that's not the entire chapter, because, as I said, we believe that that is an expansive and rather exact definition of love. The first three verses would be the application. If I speak with the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. I'm only making noise. Mm. If my words, my speech is not founded on love. You hear a lot these days about hate speech. Well, I've got the answer. Are your words founded in love? Are they born of love? When you go to open your mouth, when's the last time I asked myself, why am I going to jack my jaw? Why am I going to utter words? What is my motive? Are they born of love? Or are they born of hate? It's very, very difficult to determine, and that's where we all have to grow up and be adults and discipline ourselves.
And how do we make us all grow up?
Yeah, that was going to be my question. I was like, no, that's okay. If I could just jump in real quick, because I was, and maybe I'll play the devil's advocate. I usually don't take that role on in this when I'm on with Peter, but. But, how does somebody then, like, just thinking about, like, we were talking about the current sort of political climate and where we find ourselves as a society. And, I mean, I think to a certain extent, people are pretty affirmed in their positions, wherever they are, right? And they definitely don't think that their vision of the world or their thoughts or the ideas and their beliefs that they hold are hateful. But they're definitely juxtaposed to other views and opinions and thoughts and beliefs. So how could both sides, right, either side, use this and what use the idea of love, and then what would motivate them to do that?
I think Peter hit the nail on the head a minute ago with regard to, you know, to love someone is to put yourself second, to put it simply. If you delve into the world of psychology, C.G. Jung was famous for having said, love is the thing that affords us the power to transcend the self.
Mm-hmm.
The day, the moment, the hour when I decide to put myself second and transcend myself, my selfish, as we said in the introduction, and the definition, love is not self-serving. It's not about me. It's about the other. It's about you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think one of the real problems with our society is the lack of love, obviously. But more particularly, we seem to believe that love is an emotion. And I would contend it's not. It's part of our volition. I decide to be patient with you. I decide not to be self-serving. I decide not to keep a record of wrongs. Those are willful decisions. The most difficult thing I've ever attempted to do is try to genuinely love other people. When I first began to be affected by the passage myself, I realized I had really never loved anybody.
Mm.
And if you want to talk about what Western culture believes love is, that's infatuation,
right.
and lust,
mm-hmm.
For the most part. And so that's where I'm coming from. And so it's a disciplined approach, and that's why we offer a definition. And then how do we apply that? What is the application?
Mm-hmm.
You were going to say something?
It was probably profound too, but I've forgotten it. Ask you about being a pastor when you didn't love, but we'll get to that. You're mentioning theoretically what you're saying sounds great in terms of seeing our society turn in that wonderful direction. You're mentioning a lot of things that are profoundly inconsistent with our society, like self-discipline, like deciding consciously, and you're ignoring the fact that so many feel so victimized. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people whom a lot of political allies of mine might call haters. I play pickleball with them, and yeah, they may hate the abstract criminal, the abstract immigrant, and the abstract bureaucrat that's you know, wasting our money. But they're nice people, you know, to each other, and they think they love, and they think they're wonderful to the world. But because of the way they're victimized, or you know, their group is victimized, you know, they can't love right now because of that. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense.
How do you
sense.
Reach the rest of the people?
It makes perfect sense. You alluded there to they can't love. There's a difference between I can't do something and I won't do something. And that for me is the critical part of understanding what I'm trying to communicate with regard to how to relate to another person.
Granted, but in their minds, they can't because I can't love everybody right now because, you know, because those people out there elected somebody I don't like or whatever.
And I think they're being dishonest with themselves.
Yes, but people are dishonest with themselves. How do you reach them?
Hopefully by loving them. I think it was Martin Luther King Jr. who said, whom you would change, you must first love.
Yes.
And so it's hard work. There's absolutely, I'm not naive. I'm not in a bubble, so to speak. As I said, I spent 30 years in the world of theology, answers, as it were, as I allude to it. And people get very comfortable in that world. Most people who are religious are religious for any number of reasons, not the least of which is they feel comfortable in that environment, that those confines, that cultural context. And that's wonderful and that's great, and it affords us a lot of good things. But what I'm suggesting, and the way I see it in my mind's eye, is I'm ready to offer a graduate course in spirituality, in the sense that, for example, and I alluded to the fact that I think that 1 Corinthians 13 affords us the most expansive and exact definition of love in print. And I've even asked AI to help me if I'm wrong. And evidently, there's not anything more expansive, but it will argue with you a little bit about the exactness. So neither here nor there.
I'd go along with AI on that one. I got to sidetrack us for a moment.
Sure.
You were a pastor for a long time, and you know, in fiction, I'm writing about a pastor earlier than you were. But how much was there a conflict between what you wanted to do, help people, make them more spiritual, make them feel better, make them do better? And all the magic that science does not support, that you had to kind of go along with, like the virgin birth and, you know, whatever else.
I'm not quite clear on the question.
The question is, if you want to help people, but you don't believe some of the spiritual or how did you in your mind deal with, I'm assuming there was, tell me if there wasn't, a tension between, you know, science telling us the world is very, very old and the universe is very, very vast, and the biblical version of all that, or the virgin birth or whatever it might be.
I get you.
Did you feel a conflict, and what did you do inside about it?
Yeah, I get your question now. And yes, for me, it was part of the reason that I resigned as senior pastor of First Baptist Church Las Cruces in February of 2004 was what you're alluding to. I had begun to realize that my theology, my beliefs, my thinking, as it were, was beginning to be more and more divergent from what First Baptist Church of Las Cruces, for example, historically had held to. And I felt like it was not fair to them, nor was it my right, as it were, to dramatically or definitively change the direction. I do believe that for the 10 years that I was there, senior pastor, I do believe that I had some effect on the direction that they were going theologically. But at some point, at least for me, you have to be honest with yourself and say, this marriage, as it were, may not last much longer because I'm going in this direction and they seem to be wanting to go in the other direction or at least some divergent direction. And so that was part of my decision at that point to say, it's been great. Really appreciate the opportunity. You folks are great. And even today, I wish them well. I know the senior pastor there. I know many of the members. I'll be going there this Saturday for a wedding. And so there's no ill will on my part so far as our departure. Mm-hmm. But for me, I really do at this point in my theological thinking believe that, for example, Christianity, I haven't mentioned, but all the world religions, without exception, espouse love as a predominant, as the supreme moral good. And so I'm virtually speaking to the better part of 7 billion people who live on the planet who at least intellectually ascend to the idea that love is good, if not great. And I would argue that, for example, from the Christian perspective, it's deified. Whoever does not love does not know God, for God is love. That's as close as you can come to a definition or description of the essence of God.
Yeah. Well, no, thank you for that. so I guess I want to ask the sort of a follow-up to my question earlier, just around the one Peter alluded it to, also the how. So you left the church, and it sounds like you didn't abandon your faith.
No.
And then decided you started teaching, and also you have this school. So I'm just kind of curious about what has that impact had on the folks that have attended either your class or who've attended the school? Because I would imagine that there's lots of people, if they hear about what you're teaching, you know, there's already people that are on the path to wanting to discover this sort of this mindset and this philosophy. But maybe you've also encountered people who haven't, and then they attend your courses or your school, and they think, "Huh, this isn't what I expected," and maybe it was something surprising coming from that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been very interesting and continues to be. And that's why we're basically at this point just doing a once a month focus group, which I see as, if you will, sort of a bunch of guinea pigs, me included, of course, where I throw out ideas and then they respond to those ideas because I've been met with affirmation by some. I've been met by real skepticism on the part of others. I'm thinking of one individual now that is an older guy. I say older, I'm older, so he's my age. And so his whole concept or perspective was, you know, that's really naive.
Mm.
That's a really naive concept. You know, we're just all going to love each other. We're just all going to get in a big room and hug each other. And that's that, in my opinion, that's that Western mentality that seems to think that love is an emotion. And it is, in my opinion, it is related to our emotional life, there's no question, but it is critically a part of our volitional life. I will choose to either be kind or be unkind. That is not an emotion. Now, emotions can be born from those decisions, obviously, if you do any studies with regard to neurology and all of that sort of stuff. But for me, the answer at this point is, as those people are coming, most people are wondering, why does it seem that our society is completely becoming unraveled? Why does it seem, and I think accurately so, our society seems to be really dissolving before our very eyes.
We're in 1930s Germany. I wouldn't
disagree with that.
Respond to one thing is that you were talking about decision and emotion being different. Maybe another way of formulating it is that love is a decision to feel and act on a certain emotion.
Yes.
Because you're feeling love and hate and fear and everything else. At any moment, you're feeling a bunch of things you're not paying attention to.
I appreciate you being paying attention. Because you're getting it.
Well, I'm stuck here with you. What can I do?
Well, just because you're stuck with someone doesn't mean you pay attention. Anybody who's ever been married knows the answer to that question. No, I appreciate, because you are getting it. It is the ability to understand that I'm in charge of my emotions. I'm in charge of my thoughts. And, I mean, we can get into the whole world of, mental discipline and self-awareness and being present and all of these, and you mentioned earlier, the scientific view. I've always been something of a scientist, and I've never been satisfied with, just shut up and be quiet and believe. I've just never been that sort of person, and I suppose that's the reason I find myself where I am today. But yes, it's absolutely part of our mental discipline, our emotional discipline. I went and got certified in emotional intelligence because I wanted to understand the concepts. Mm. I wanted to see what is this stuff we call emotions as opposed to volition. And as I said, I think everybody's stuck on thinking that love is some warm, fuzzy feeling. It's an emotion. And, who knows how to handle that thing? And what they're literally, I think, referring to is, for example, infatuation, which is incredibly intoxicating, but has little to do with your volition. And in fact, you could be called crazy in the state or insane in the state of infatuation. And any adult, I think, that's honest
believe with me, you're preaching to the choir there.
Have been there. And when we finally sober up from that stuff, we realize, what have I done? Mm.
Yeah, and sometimes it turns out that by blind luck you've done the right thing. Other times it's profoundly the reverse, and I think a lot of times it was interesting years ago when I was more in other places to talk to friends. Or friends' mothers in Nepal, say, or somewhere where they. But, arranged marriages. Mm-hmm. And the women would say, I really was, when they told me I'm marrying this stranger, no, I want to go to school or whatever. And then, we worked at it. And we had kids and, I love them. And I wonder, we begin a marriage with the infatuation and the huge expectations, more and more in our society where we don't have, extended family living around us, community, churches, less and less. And we're kind of putting everything on the love relationship. So we start with these huge expectations. If we started saying, nuts, I got to marry that person, and looked at that person and, I'm in this. And the other person looked and said, we're both in this. What can we do? Maybe end up doing a lot better.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up. Last time I looked at the statistics, arranged marriages are more lasting than those in the West. And we react to that, and we actually sometimes vehemently react to that because we're so enamored with being enamored.
Yes.
We're sick. Our society is sick at that point.
But I guess I would ask critically, you know, how much that's a statistic. How much of that is based on what I was just talking about, and how much is the fact that you're in a repressive society? I mean, I've talked to, you know, even my mother would fit this, but I talked to friends' mothers in this country many years ago when we were young, and they all, almost all said, you know, the early years, I came very close to divorcing, but you couldn't divorce in those days, particularly with a kid, so I stuck with it. And now anyway.
Yeah, there's certainly a cultural societal pressure there that has diminished over the years in the West, and part of the reason for the divorce rate. And so, you know, that's a whole nother bowl of cherries, as it were. But
We're running out of time.
Well, here we go.
I should have scheduled you for an hour next time. But what else have we not, you know, I know it's kind of jumping from the subject.
I think we've covered you know, the essence of what we're trying to accomplish. If
folks are interested, in what you're trying to accomplish, how do they reach you?
Our website is www.theschoolforgrowthnm.com, and then our email address is theschoolforgrowth@gmail.com. And we'd be glad to hear from anyone. And my challenge stands, if someone can find a more expansive and more exact definition of love, I will, in fact, discard the one that I have adopted, or we have adopted, I should say, and replace it. Because I really do believe, I mean, I could go for a while, as you just said, maybe an hour, but philosophically, sociologically, psychologically, theologically, when you really take a deep dive in the concept of love, you're going to be affected if you're intellectually honest.
Well, my first question next time we get together and have an hour is, how has that affected you as a person?
I'd love an opportunity to have your listeners listen to a guy who pastored for 30 years and finally figured out he was not completely off track. But what did they say? I wasn't off track, but maybe not the right train.